Well, welcome. We're in this series, But of Course, and I actually want to start off, before I kind of get into my message, I want to talk a little bit about the Vandalia campus, because for the last 2 years, they have heavily been saying But of Course to God a lot, and I want to tell you and just kind of celebrate and brag a little bit about what God's doing on our campus, and I just want to start off by doing that. Our campus, the Vandalia campus, has grown just over 35% in weekend attendance over the last 2 years. That's been pretty amazing. And thank you. We're not done either. I mean, hey, we're already clapping for us, Vandalia. That's awesome. But if you've never been to our campus, this is a little bit of what it looks like. We set up in a school. We set it up and tear it down each week. So that's a little bit of what it looks like. But we've also doubled in small groups over the last 2 years. So we have twice as many small groups as we did 2 years ago. And this just comes from, both of these things just come from our campus has just been willing to invest in people's lives, build into their lives, build community with them, and then invite them to something. They've invited them to events, they've invited them to small groups, they've invited them to a weekend service, they've invited them to just their house to have lunch or dinner together. They are doing an amazing job in Vandalia of just saying, but of course, and connecting people to our church. We've had the opportunity also to add a second service. We did that about 10 months ago, and it's been really neat to see that second service just connecting other people with a different time slot. You know, hey, if you need to show up a little bit later, they've been doing that. Some people are early birds. They show up to the early one. You guys know all about that with the three service thing here. We've been able to start regional small groups. So we had a family that said, you know what, we'll start a small group in our town, and they are about 20 miles away from us. And they're just like, we want to start something here and see what God has for this community that we live in. Then we had another family that lives almost 40 miles away from us, and they said the same thing. We'll start there. And we are excited to see what God is going to do through those small groups and looking at the possibility of future multi-sites in those towns, just simply because we had a couple families that are willing to open their home to another small group. We've been able to baptize 25 people where they just followed in obedience and followed in baptism to let everybody know, hey, I do follow Jesus, and I want to show you that, and I love him. And there's some of the examples there. We are a mobile campus, so you can see sometimes it's in our mobile baptismal there, and sometimes we have to find pools. You know, it's just wherever we can find it to baptize people. Last year, last October, November area, we had our largest attended weekend service in the history of our campus at our 10th anniversary. It was amazing to be a part of. This is a little bit of what happened there. We called it MV10. We had just a great weekend of celebrating what only God can do in our life, and he has continued to do that even beyond that point. And then I wanted to bring a little bit of recognition to our Fusion, which is our teenagers, our youth group. They are doing an amazing job of connecting with other teens, and we're seeing a lot of life change happen. We're seeing them connect in. We've had several leaders step into those roles because they're growing. We've grown something like ridiculous, like 200% or something. It's a ridiculous number to even say almost. But our teens, we have some upperclassmen, sophomores, juniors, seniors. They're just taking these middle schoolers under their wing and just kind of showing them the ropes, helping teach them about Jesus, being their friend in the classrooms and in the hallways. I don't know if all of us would have done that as sophomores, juniors, and seniors, but they're stepping out and doing that, and it's been pretty amazing to just see that happening. You know, there's two things that I want you to capture, though, with all of this. One is, without God doing what he does, this doesn't happen. I mean, God just had something to do, and the people in Vandalia are just willing to be obedient and follow everything God wanted to do, and so it has happened. And it's been happening like crazy. It's been awesome to see God working. But the second thing I want you to grasp is that I almost didn't get to be a part of this. I was very close to not being in ministry anymore. And I'm going to share with you a little bit of what I experienced with God and what I experienced in my life over the past several years where it was just difficult. And I almost just walked away from being a pastor. And I had to really wrestle through some things, and God brought me through. And I want to share some of those stories with you today. I want you to grasp, I'm not sharing this with you so that you go, oh, Tim, let me give you a hug. You know, we're so sorry for you. I'm not looking for self-pity. I'm not looking for you to feel sorry for me. The reason I'm sharing these stories with you is because I think we all go through these times. I think we all experience very similar stories to what's in my life. And as I'm telling them, you're probably going to think of different situations and circumstances that have happened to you. And you're like, oh, yeah, different people, different job, different location. Yeah, that pretty much happened to me. And others of you are going to be thinking, man, I've had way worse stuff than that. And that's probably true. I think that's my point, is that we've all had different just circumstances, negative, terrible circumstances happen to us. And so I want to share some of those with you. So one of those is I went to college to be a pastor. I don't know if you knew you could do that, but yes, I went and got a degree to be a pastor. I had two great dreams in my life. The first was, I'm going to play in the NBA. That didn't work out, obviously. But I realized early on in high school, this isn't going to happen. You may look at me and you're like, you're pretty tall. Not in the NBA. I'm one of the short guys in the NBA, all right? I would not have been very tall. And I was really slow. I could not handle the ball very well. I could not shoot very well. And you better be able to shoot. I couldn't do those things. So it became very obvious, I'm not making it to the NBA. My second greatest dream was that I wanted to be a pastor. I wanted to lead people to Jesus. I wanted to lead them in their walk with Jesus. I wanted to care for them within that spiritual realm. And that was a dream that I had, and I went to college to do that. And one day while I was at college, I was sharing with my professor. I was like, Professor, there's just something inside of me. I can't explain it. It's just kind of in there where I think I'm going to speak to thousands of people. I think I'm going to preach to thousands of people. And he's like, he's probably trying to temper my enthusiasm a little bit, but he said, Tim, you know, the average church size is about 75 people. It's probably not going to happen. Some of it has happened. That's been exciting. But, you know, I had to kind of work through that and temper that. Another situation that happened was after I graduated, I was excited because I'm like, all right, I got the degree. Time to go be a pastor. I get to actually do what I was training to do. And so I start putting out resumes, and I start applying for positions. And over again, it keeps coming back that they don't want me. I wasn't even getting an interview. Some of the things that I was being told was, you know, you're not married yet. We're looking for somebody who's married. I was like, okay, I can't do a whole lot about that unless you're going to help me find the other side of that. What I was hearing back is, you know, you're just too inexperienced. I was like, I need experience to get more experience, right? And so I kept hearing all of these things. And after about 2 years of this, I hit a very low point, like really low. My wife and I actually had gotten married just a couple months before this low point. And it was so low that my new bride actually called my parents. And she was like, hey, I think you need to talk to Tim. He's scaring me a little bit with just how low he is. So my mom does what moms do. She called me, and she made everything a little bit better, and I moved forward. And a couple months after that, after this low point, a church finally called and said, Tim, we want you to come be our youth pastor. And I want to tell you, I could have come through the roof. I was so excited. Like, it's one of those excitements where you don't know what to do. You're, like, dancing, and you don't care who's watching. You're just dancing around. You're like, yeah. I actually was calling extended family members going, I got a pastor job. And they were like, great. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to tell you. But I was just excited about it. And I get to this church, and we pack up and move away, and we get to this church. And like 1 month in, I go home, and I'm like, Rachel, I don't know how long we're going to be here. We are in serious financial trouble as a church. And a few months after, sure enough, that plays out. Pastor pulls me aside and says, hey, Tim, we can't pay you anymore. And I had to go home and try to explain to my wife that I wasn't going to be able to take care of her like I thought I was going to because my job, my church, couldn't pay me to be the youth pastor anymore. Thankfully, a couple months after that, another church brought me in to be a youth pastor. So I'm working with the teenagers. There's a lot of life change happening. They're inviting their friends. Things are happening. It's really exciting to the point where I'm like, we need to start a college ministry. Because there's just connection happening. Let's go to the next level and see if we can reach that next level in the college age. So we started this ministry, and any of you that have ever started anything in your life know that in that initial period, it's just rocky. You know, you're trying to figure things out. You're trying to learn. There's ups and downs. Sometimes you're like, oh, man, everybody knows we're here. This is so great. And then on the other side, it's like, does anybody know we're even here? Like, do they know we exist? And you kind of go through these ups and downs. Well, in that time period of going through those ups and downs, my wife and I went on vacation. I left people in charge to handle everything. So we got back from vacation. I was like, hey, how'd everything go? And they go, you need to talk to Pastor. I was like, was something wrong? Like, did something major happen? They're like, you need to talk to Pastor. So I go, I talk to Pastor, and he's like, hey, Tim, while you were away on vacation, I shut this ministry down for good. I was like, while I was on vacation? Like, we couldn't have a discussion or a conversation about this? You just did it behind my back? And sure enough, that's what happened, and we were done with the college ministry. And shortly after that, he ended up retiring, and we were in this middle time as a church, this in-between time of trying to find another pastor. Pastor retires and trying to find another pastor. And during this middle time, I'm having a conversation with one of the parents of a teen in my youth group, and she starts telling me that we have another staff member, somebody on my team, that is going around to parents telling them not to send their children to youth group because I'm a bad influence on them. I was like, you probably didn't hear it right. Like, I was trying to give as much of benefit of the doubt as possible. So you probably didn't hear that right. They're like, no. Actually, another parent heard and came over and was like, yes, that's exactly what's happening. I was like, what? Like, this happens? And so I confronted this staff member and his wife. And I really thought, this can't be right. Like, they must have heard something incorrectly. So I say, hey, you know, I heard this. And the staff member and his wife were like, oh, Tim, we are so sorry that you found out about that. I was like, how about being sorry that you did it? They're like, oh, you know, we thought we were talking to friends. It's like, so you don't care that you're doing this? Because you thought you were talking to friends. Well, the church leadership in this in-between time between pastors, they did their research on it. And they came back to me and they said, hey, we totally think he's doing this. In normal circumstances, we would just fire him. But we're in this in-between time and we don't want the church to go through more hurt than it needs to. So we're not going to do anything with it. I was like, so this guy just gets to destroy my character and destroy my leadership. And I just have to take it. And it got really hard to the point where I was like, maybe I'm just done with this whole thing. You know, I don't know if I'm being any good or use. Maybe I'm just done. And I was contemplating walking away. And I don't know about you, but maybe you've had those times in your life where it's just hard. There's negative perceptions going on. And you're not really sure how to respond. I mean, it could be negative perceptions about that you have too inexperienced, or you're too experienced, or maybe you're too young or too old. Maybe it's about our gender or our ethnicity or race. Maybe it's our social status, where we just feel the negativity and we're just like, what am I doing? Like, I don't know what to do. And we try to come up with responses. Like, it's hard to know how to respond to all of this. And so we're like, you know what? I'll show them. We kind of have that response, right? I'll show them. And I went through all of these. I'll show them. Or maybe it's, I'll debate them. Like, I'll just use my words to just show them why what they think is just completely wrong. Or maybe it's, I'll fight them. Like, let's go. I'm ready to throw down right now. Like, let's get it on. Maybe we have that reaction. But what I want to do tonight is talk about what's the response that God wants us to have when these negative perceptions are going on around us. And so the first response that we need to have is listen to the challenge, encouragement, and teaching of a mentor. Listen to the challenge, encouragement, and teaching of a mentor. We're going to jump into the Bible in just a little bit, but I actually want to give you the backstory which gives us this first response. You see, we're going to look at a book of the Bible called 1 Timothy. And this is a letter written from a guy named Paul to a guy named Timothy. And Paul is a guy who started churches all over Asia and all over Europe. And he developed, and the church word is discipled, but he mentored and trained and developed leaders all over the place. And then when he started churches, he would leave them there to lead those churches. And so Timothy is one of these guys that he left, and he left them in a city called Ephesus to be the pastor of this church. And he's going to write him this letter. And I want you to hear, Paul loved Timothy. He called him his son in the faith. So Paul viewed Timothy as a son, and Timothy viewed Paul as a father figure. They had a very close relationship. And in this letter that Paul writes to Timothy, we're just going to look at one verse in it, but when you look at, if you were to read the whole letter, you would see him challenging Timothy to not just get comfortable, but go beyond. You would see him encouraging him where he's struggling. You would see him teaching him and reminding him of things that he's already been taught to go out and do that. You know what? Each one of us need that in our lives. You know, Harry needed Dumbledore. Luke Skywalker needed Yoda. The X-Men needed Professor Xavier. And Robin needed Batman. But I'm going to tell you, if your mentor has you wearing that, you may want to consider if that's the right mentor for you. I am not wearing those shorty short spandex things, all right? I mean, like, I would be starting to question if my mentor knew what he was talking about if I was doing that. But we do. We all need this mentor in our lives. We should have one. They teach us about life. They teach us about marriage. They teach us about parenting. They teach us about being single. They teach us how to be a good student. They teach us how to get better at the different sports that we play. They just teach us. They encourage us. They challenge us. So what do you look for with this mentor? First one is challenge. Find somebody who's willing to challenge you. They're not willing to just let you be comfortable. It's going to be somebody where you're like, man, every time I'm like feeling, I get this deep breath where I'm like, oh, I'm comfortable. They give me the next step, and it's kind of frustrating. That actually is good. That's somebody that's wanting to be your mentor. It's somebody who's encouraging you. Do you just have somebody who's your number one fan? Like, you fall on your face and fail, and they're just like, it's all right, you're going to be okay, we're going to figure this out for next time. That's a good mentor. Somebody who's teaching you, like, you have these questions, and they can just seem to answer them, and you're like, wow, that's pretty incredible that they were able to answer that question. I can tell you, Vandalia, I can tell you right here, if you don't have a mentor, somebody in the room you're in right now wants to be your mentor. I know this about this church because I've seen it for 2 years. People just want to teach and challenge and encourage other people here. And you can find that mentor if you don't know it. But I want to give you the flip side of this too. Maybe you're like, oh yeah, I could name the three mentors I have and I've had them for years. Who are you mentoring? Because both sides are needed according to the Bible. Paul needed Timothy, but Timothy needed Paul. Both sides are needed. And we need to mentor and be mentored. In my life, when I was at this point where I was just like, maybe it's time to walk away. Maybe I'm just done being a pastor. A guy stepped into my life, and it was the next pastor of that church, of the church I was at. He stepped into my life, and he just basically put his arm around me and said, do you want to know how to be a pastor? I said, yeah, absolutely. And he's like, let me teach you. And he was a guy that every time I would get a little bit comfortable going, ah, I kind of got a handle on this, he would challenge me. I'm like, oh, what are you doing to me? And he would constantly encourage me. You know, when I would fail, I had one of the worst messages of my life under this guy, and he was an encourager through the whole thing. He was willing to teach me. He just gave me the answers. And Vandalia, I want to tell you, Edwardsville, I want to tell you too, but Vandalia, the reason I get to be the pastor that I am for you is because of this guy. Because of what he taught me and poured into me. He's heavily the reason why I became the pastor that I am today. And there's people out there that want to do that with you. And you want to know how to respond to negative perceptions that constantly come your way? Find an individual like this. So let's look at this second response. You need this first response. You need that mentor to kind of get to this second response. That's why I want you to catch that having a mentor is such a big deal. So the second response is, move past the limitations placed on you by others. In 1 Timothy 4:12, this is Paul talking to Timothy, he says, don't let anyone look down on you because you are young. See, the negative perception coming towards Timothy was that he was too young. I mean, we don't know exactly how young he was, but apparently he was pretty young because basically the entire church was going, this guy's pretty young. And they were like, I don't know if you can answer questions about my life because you're pretty young. And here Paul just kind of pushes through the garbage and says, move past those limitations. Because here's what happens to us. It's just a natural response for all of us. When things start being said about us, what is said most often and loudest, we begin to believe it. Like, maybe I am too young. Maybe I'm not a pastor. Maybe, you start walking through and going, maybe they're right. And here, Timothy's mentor, Paul, just says, move past all of that. Don't let that limitation be placed on you. I left you in charge. Like, I think you can handle it. Move past that. So these negative perceptions that may be coming towards you, are you willing to move past those? And the definition that they're placing on you, whoever they are, to a definition that God puts on us. How does God define me? How does God define us? What does he have to say about us? What does he have to say about the future he has for us? And then are we willing to walk in that instead of listening to the limitations placed on us by others? And this takes us to our third response. Set the godly example in all areas of your life. The second half of this verse, where Paul's talking to Timothy, says this, but set an example for the believers in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, and in purity. I want you to catch this. Paul is writing to Timothy, and we see these five areas of life that Paul's just saying, set an example. Set a godly example for the church. But I want you to capture something because it's not really just right there in the verse. Paul wrote a letter a few years before this to Timothy's church, the church of Ephesus. It's a book in the Bible called Ephesians. And in that letter to his church, he actually describes in detail these five areas. So he's reminding Timothy, I've already talked to your church about how they should be living in these areas. You just set the example. You set the godly example in these five areas. They already know they're supposed to be doing it. You just set the example for them, and they'll start learning that they need to follow. So what are these five areas? First area of our life that we need to set a godly example is speech. Ephesians 5:4 says, nor should there be obscenity, foolish talk, or coarse joking, which are out of place, but rather thanksgiving. So how's your vocabulary? What jokes are you using? What jokes are you telling? When other people hear you talk, does it just brighten their day listening to you talk about what's going on and about other people? Or does it ruin their day? They're like, oh, they're at it again. When you talk about other people, are you building them up or are you tearing them down? Are you spreading gossip and rumor, or are you squashing it? You know, here at Metro, we say everybody carries two buckets. One is a bucket full of water, one's a bucket full of gasoline. If somebody's trying to start a fire with rumor and gossip, we ask everybody to throw water. Put it out as quickly as possible. Because if you throw that gasoline, I don't know if you've ever seen a fire where gasoline got thrown on it, but it is dangerous, like explosive danger, not lighter fluid. Gasoline. It's like explosive dangerous. Like somebody could die very easily. And when we rumor and gossip and nobody puts it out, that's exactly what could happen. Maybe they don't actually die, but they could be ruined. Their lives could be ruined. The second area is conduct, how we live our life. Ephesians 5:1 says, follow God's example, therefore, as dearly loved children. Now, this is big. I mean, set the godly example. Like, that is impossible, right? It is, but that's the bar. God set the bar high. Follow my example. But as dearly loved children, you see, when we give our lives over to Jesus, we become part of a family. It's the family of God. Metro Community Church is our local family of God, where we get to just see each other every week, spend time together. But in that, God loves his children. And we have a father that loves us. So when he says the bar is me, set the example of me, it's not a father that's coming in like scolding us, like you're messing up, failing. It's a father that loves us and wants us to keep pressing on and doing better. And he is going to give us everything we need to continue to do what we need to do for him in setting that godly example in our lives. The third area of our life is love. Ephesians 5:2 says, "And walk in the way of love, just as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us as a fragrant offering and sacrifice for God." Walk in the way of love. Basically what this means is as you go about your day, it should basically be defined by love. Like, that guy just loves people. That guy just loves God. That woman just loves who she works with. It should be defined as love, just as we're going about our day. And actually, if you wanted to say, okay, but what does this love look like? We actually see this in the second half of this verse. Just as Christ loved us. So Christ gave himself up as a sacrifice. He gave himself for us. Are we giving our lives for other people? As we're going about our day, are we willing to sacrifice for others? That's what a life of love looks like when you're setting the godly example. The fourth area is faith. In him and through faith in him, we may approach God with freedom and confidence. That's Ephesians 3:12. See, when we give our lives to God, we get instant access to him in prayer. We get to go before him and just talk to him. And when there's negative perceptions going on around us, it's really hard to hear. It's really hard to move forward. And we get to go to God and tell him about what we're experiencing, and we get to find freedom. Freedom from the perceptions and freedom to find truth about who we are and what God desires from us. We get to find boldness. We don't have to worry about what he thinks of us. We already know we're his loved children when we come before him. And then we get to leave having faith, where we get to see our future, we get to see where God wants us to head, we get to see how God wants to use our lives, and we get to have boldness in that. We get to have freedom in that, where we're free to move forward with him amid all of the negative perception. The fifth area of our life is purity. Ephesians 5:3 says, "But among you there must not even be a hint of sexual immorality or any kind of impurity or of greed, because these are improper for God's holy people." Really, the heart of what this is getting at, our desires are not the messed up thing. We have to place our desire and pursuit after God and not material objects or possessions. So how are we doing with that? Are we pursuing after God and then letting him fill the desires of our heart? Or are we pursuing after objects and material possessions so that they will fill our heart and then maybe we have some time for God? Because setting the godly example pursues after God first, where we say, "But of course I would do what you would have me to do." And then we're going to have those material possessions and objects as life goes on. How are we living our lives? Are we setting the godly example? So I'm going to tell you, when you're willing to step out and set that godly example, people will start to notice. They do. They may not be able to put their finger on it, but they know there's something different about you. They realize, like, man, this person is showing more love, or they just how they go about their day is just different than everybody else goes about their day. You know, they're not talking the same anymore. What I really wanted to get us to grasp is setting the godly example is God's way of responding to negative perception. You're having a difficult time walking through a hard time where there's a lot of negativity, negative perceptions about you are being pointed in your direction. Respond by setting the godly example in these five areas. And I actually added a graph into your program right there. You can see on your outline sheet. I think if we would just take one of these in this week, some of you, you know, you're overachievers. You want to be the A-plus student. That's fine. You're going to focus on all five. For the rest of us, find one area of your life where you're just like, okay, I'm going to do better in this area, and pick that one. Now, in that first column, you're going to see doing great. When negative perception's coming our way, I think we need to give ourselves just a little bit of credit that we're getting some things right, okay? So I give you permission to say, I'm getting this right, okay? So for me, I want to get this really practical. So I'm just going to take the first one with speech in my own life. So where I'm doing great, I love encouraging people. I love writing notes. I love, you know, Facebook messaging, whatever it may be. I love to just encourage people. And then I love teaching about God. That's what I'm doing right now. So those are ways that I'm using my speech where I'm doing great. But where do I need improvement? Well, when I look over my recent life, it's moments with my kids. And here's the specific moments. When they trip and fall, or, you know, some freak accident happens where they're on the verge of crying or going to cry, or maybe they're just scared. And this is actually something that I saw in these moments. They were scared. And when I would step in, I was not doing a good job as a dad to calm the situation. I was escalating it, all right? I kept seeing this. I was like, man, I have got to get better at this. Like, I am doing a terrible job. And so my application, the thing that I wanted to start doing better was 1 John 4:18. And I just try to quote this little part of 1 John 4:18 before I step into those situations to remind myself. And really, it's really easy. What it says is, perfect love casts out fear, or drives away fear. Where if I step in love, that fear that they have is going to go away. And so I started doing this in these situations. I would step in and try to just love my child and say loving things, or just hold them, or, you know, pat their back or whatever, and just let them know, Daddy's here. He loves you. And it's been pretty neat to see how it's calmed the situation. But pick one of those areas for your own life. Because I'm going to tell you, if you work on this week, people are going to notice. And they're going to start to ask questions. What's different about you? You're going to be able to talk about God and what he's doing in your life. You're going to be able to talk about your church. You're going to be able to talk about different aspects of your life that are going to start connecting people to God, and they're going to start taking notice that these are people that have been with Jesus and walk with Jesus. Would you pray with me? God, I don't know where everybody is in this room, but I'm pretty positive there's several people walking through some difficult circumstances right now. And ultimately, God, some of them may need to just give their life over to you and let you begin to live in them and through them. So, Lord, if there's anybody here, I pray that right now they would hand their life over to you, that they would tell you that they need you, they love you, they're giving you their life, and that they would begin to walk with you. Lord, for others of us, several of these areas could just be very messed up in our lives. And it's difficult to work on things when the negative perceptions are going on around us, but I pray that they would push through that and pick one of these areas to start responding and setting the godly example for others to follow. Because connecting people to you is worth it. Living for you is worth it, because we love you. Pray these things in your name. Amen.